The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerker's Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
If Patrick Henry were still alive, he would listen to the Constitution Hour, featuring Professor Kevin Gutzman, debuting at noon Central, here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
And welcome to this edition of the Constitution Hour, featuring Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, best-selling author, best-selling New York Times author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, James Madison, and the Making of America, and very soon, The Political Thought of Thomas Jefferson. This is episode number 16 of the Constitution Hour. If you missed any of the previous 15 episodes, you can always download them as part of your membership at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. This episode is also available along with the first 10 episodes, Constitution Hour's Greatest Hits, as individual for sale downloads. Find those at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. All right, let's get right to it and bring the professor on. So, Kevin, we have a very, very, very sumptuous bouquet of Constitution Hour cornucopia to go through today. There is no shortage of constitutional insanity today, right?
Yeah, insanity, dumbness, whatever you want to call it.
I know you didn't want to talk about the Ted Cruz thing, but it is humorous or that someone on Facebook is calling you an idiot over the eligibility of Ted Cruz, which allegedly was settled this week in a New Jersey courtroom. My headline at MikeChurch.com today on that is New Jersey judge gavels final nail into Constitution coffin. Ted Cruz flees the scene of the murder.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that opinion, which doesn't really merit a lot of our discussion, is that after he lays out a precedent that shows that Cruz isn't eligible, he then turns around and says, so he is. It's just, it's as if it's an attempt to show us that we aren't going to pay any attention to the Constitution. And of course, it's especially appealing coming from the quote-unquote constitutionalist campaign.
So. Oh, yes, and we have lots to say about that today. So let's get right into it. Our first headline today on the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman is the following headline. Donald Trump flat out says Ted Cruz illegally coordinated with super PACs violating election law. Donald Trump, in his, shall we say, defeat statement following his Wisconsin loss, leveled some pretty heavy accusations at his opponent, Edward Rafael Cruz. This time he's accusing a Republican presidential hopeful of flat-out violating election law. In a statement, Trump's campaign said, in part, not only was he, Cruz, propelled by the anti-Trump super PAC spending countless millions of dollars on false advertising against Mr. Trump, but he was coordinating with his own super PACs, which is illegal, who totally control him. According to OpenSecrets.org, there were 12 pro-Ted Cruz super PACs that have raised millions of dollars, a group called Keep the Promise 3 has raised the most funds at over $16.5 million. However, to date, we have no evidence that Cruz openly coordinated with these groups, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. The rules on what counts as coordination are a bit murky. Now, you wanted to talk about this particular incident and about the rules governing super PACs, right?
Well, yes. I think it's this is an illustration of one absurd feature of our contemporary constitutional law system. And for those of you listening who aren't familiar with this, the term constitutional law refers to the body of precedents, mostly court precedents, purportedly implementing the Constitution. So they essentially, constitutional law tells us how the Constitution will be interpreted, how it'll be read. And we have a large body of constitutional law by this point that says, essentially, although you're free to print all kinds of pornography, and although you're free to argue for the overthrow of the U.S. government on behalf of communist foreigners, you are going to be tightly regulated if you try to say that, say, Ted Cruz ought to be elected president. Let me restate that. You are very free to publish nude pictures of people in flagrante delicto, but you will be tightly overseen by federal officials when it comes to buying newspaper advertisements or making television commercials advocating that Hillary Clinton be elected president. I think this is an absurdity. The whole area of law is an absurdity. There's no constitutional justification for there being federal statutes circumscribing your political expression, saying that, well, you're allowed to speak up to this much, but beyond that, it could be a felony. Or if you are Ted Cruz, you are allowed to endeavor to persuade people to donate money to your campaign, which is overseen by somebody whom you've selected to propagate your message explaining why you should be elected president. But if you were to talk to someone who was working in an independent status for what's called a super PAC, whose purpose is to raise money beside Ted Cruz's campaign's money with the exact same purpose of getting Ted Cruz elected president, if you were to speak to the person who was running that effort, why, you could be committing a felony. But it's okay to publish all kinds of pictures of 18-year-old Janie, your next-door neighbor, in flagrante delicto. So this is what the Constitution's speech and press clause's main purpose is to make sure that we can have pornography and advocacy of communism or whatever other bad idea. But when again, when it comes to electoral advocacy, why, that we've got to ration.
And of course, they're rationing what the super PACs do, but they're not rationing what this website called xhamster.com does, which is now threatened to cut off all porn to North Carolina. So, as you're talking about in flagrante delicto, this may come up very soon here. We may have a Constitution Hour show here on the travails of xhamster.com. And North Carolinians who have sued to return their access to their constitutional rights, which they have the constitutional right to, of course, consume, whatever that means, all manner of pornography.
Well,
you can't make this stuff up, Kevin. You can't.
Sincerely, I just can't imagine that, you know, James Madison and Roger Sherman and John Witherspoon were thinking, okay, you know, we're not so concerned that Americans be able to make political arguments in public. That's not so important. But we need to have all kinds of readily available porn. That is a top purpose of the First Amendment. And so the courts have allowed Congress to regulate, or I prefer the word ration. They're allowed to ration our political speech, our political expenditures for newspaper advertising or television advertising, radio advertising, or, you know, advertising on the Veritas Radio Network. The Congress is allowed to limit that, but We're going to have free reign for pornography, and we're going to have free reign for all kinds of other kooky ideas that might mislead people into harming themselves, or advocacy, again, of mass murder conspiracies like, you know, the form of government enjoyed by people in various foreign countries Bernie Sanders admires, like, say, Cuba. it's just... It's ridiculous. It's worse than ridiculous. It's so obviously founded on a complete and utter disconnect from the actual constitutional intention that all you can do is shake your head. And, you know, going back to the most recent attempt by Congress to regulate campaign spending, the McCain-Feingold law that was overturned in the Citizens United case, Senator McCain explained to us that the purpose of his statute was to ensure that incumbent congressmen didn't have to deal with too much criticism too close to an election. That you might think there were other ways a congressman could avoid being criticized. Maybe, I don't know, doing a good job of representing his constituents. I'm guessing McCain never thought of that idea. So they overturned that statute, and they said that we could have these super PACs, but they still left in place the specific limits on contributions to particular campaigns. It seems obvious to me that what ought to be done is we should have, I don't know, freedom to state our political views and freedom to advocate whatever electoral outcome we want. We should be free to contribute however much money we like to some candidate's campaign, and we should be free to conduct independent expenditure if we want to. And then if the representative, say Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, whichever one of them, wanted to talk to somebody who was running an independent fund to support his campaign, there should be nothing wrong with that. I can't imagine we have a ban on Ted Cruz talking to a guy who runs an organization whose purpose is to elect Ted Cruz president. What kind of system is it that says what kind of system is it that says Ted Cruz shouldn't be allowed to talk to the guy who's running a super PAC whose purpose is to elect Ted Cruz? Like, why would anybody think that was a good idea?
Well, there must be an exception to this. What if you meet in the men's room?
Wait,
I have one even better. What if you are a female, and of course Ted is a male, as far as we know he is, and Ted petitions, hey, wait a minute now, we need to get rid of all these bathroom rules, and they meet in the ladies' room. Now!
Well, I don't know. We could consult that oracle of political philosophy, Bruce Springsteen, and see what he thinks about that. I think aging soft rockers everywhere should consult Bruce Springsteen on matters like this.
I was thinking as you were talking about James Madison and Roger Sherman getting together and going over the First Amendment, going, do you think we should include the porn to North Carolina clause, or should we leave that out? I was thinking of what would have made James Madison laugh. And I wish you would tell the story, because this is the Constitution Hour, and it's educational and entertaining. Tell the story that you once told me of how someone got James Madison to laugh and almost bust a gut at the start of the Virginia Ratifying Convention. You remember?
Well, the only story that comes to mind like that is that there were essentially three prominent spokesmen for ratification in the Virginia Ratification Convention. One was the governor, Edmund Randolph, tall, handsome, well-spoken, blue blood. Then another one was Madison, of course. The third was George Nicholas, who, like Randolph, was from a very prominent political dynasty in Virginia. Actually, his family had been ultimately would be prominent in Virginia politics for over a century. But apparently Nicholas was a very, shall we say, portly fellow. And so somebody apparently sketched an image of George Nicholas giving a speech, and it looked exactly like a plum pudding. So Madison, apparently they showed Madison this image, and he couldn't stop laughing. And actually, Nicholas has been more or less forgotten, but he was not only was he a very important figure in establishing the Virginia version of federalism, including, by the way, the right to secede in the Virginia Ratification Convention. But he also was the guy who encouraged Madison to write a short pamphlet in support of the Virginia, or in opposition, I should say, to the general assessment bill that Patrick Henry was pushing. And the end result was that Madison wrote his little memorial and remonstrance against religious assessments. So, yeah.
The remonstrance, the famous remonstrance.
That's right.
Yeah, I think of the men that we call founding fathers, well, they were far and above anything that we can imagine today. And, of course, they couldn't have imagined North Carolina being deprived of hamster porn at their time. But that does not mean that they were devoid of a sense of humor and didn't frequent the Raleigh Tavern while in Williamsburg. And I don't know where they went in Richmond. One more thing that I'd like to talk about with the Super PAC question, and you mentioned briefly the Citizens United case, which apparently was a lawsuit. Well, not apparently. It was a lawsuit that was brought against the original McCain-Feingold Act, right?
Yeah, what happened was that a group called Citizens United, which really was, what's the fellow's name? David Boies? Is that his name? I'm not sure. He was a congressional aide in the 90s, as I recall, and he had been involved in some controversy, so he left working in the U.S. House and started running his own independent effort, and he made a movie about Hillary Clinton, why Hillary Clinton shouldn't be elected to any other political offices.
Right.
And so ultimately he was taken to court because it was said that this expenditure violated the McCain-Feingold bill, and ultimately the Supreme Court said, well, he had a right to do this. And people could spend basically as much money as they wanted on political campaigns as long as they didn't coordinate them with the candidate. So now we have the very peculiar situation in which people are free to give money in support of, say, you know, Donald Trump for president, so long as Donald Trump doesn't control when the money is spent, where it's spent, what kind of advertising it's spent on, or what it says. Now, in other words, if you want to go out and attack Bernie Sanders on behalf of Hillary Clinton, you're free to do that, but Mrs. Clinton can't have anything to do with it. I think that's just nonsensical. It ought to be up to Hillary Clinton to decide, if the donors want it to be up to her to decide, what her campaign's message is. But this is the situation that Congress and the Supreme Court have left us in, and it seems pretty obvious that it's completely contrary to the Constitution's injunction that Congress shall make no law infringing the freedom of speech or press.
Yeah, and one of the things that came up in the Citizens United case was that the defense brought up that, well, if you're going to say this about the movie about Hillary Clinton, I think it was Stop Hillary or something to that effect, if you're going to say that about this movie, why aren't you going to say the same thing about Fahrenheit 9/11? I think Michael Moore actually came up during the arguments of this case. And it was just, to me, I can remember covering this, was just another one of these ridiculous, vainglorious, multi-hundred or thousand-page long attempts for Congress to basically set their buddies up in positions of influence and large receptions of cash that would heretofore have been illegal, but to make them legal, which I contend today, Kevin, most of the tax code, that's what its purpose is, to make the illegal usury reception of money legal so that the $4 trillion banquet can be divvied up between the two parties every year. And McCain-Feingold was just another attempt at this. And as you mentioned in the beginning, this was Senator McCain going, screw everybody, scum. Yeah, you can't make fun of me. You can't go in my campaign. You can't, my friends, I'll follow you to the gates of hell. You can't say those things about me in a campaign. I'll make a law. I'll make a law. And Russ will come with me. And Russ and I will make a law. And they did. And, of course, that is not the law anymore. And ultimately, when Congress Danes to do something like this, and they go ahead and they pull it off, and then there's a case where it's heard. It's very rare that the Supreme Court actually does deal with an act of Congress and then tells Congress, yeah, you probably shouldn't have done that. Is this one of the rare cases where the Supreme Court actually said that Congress acted in an unconstitutional manner? Not the Citizens United part, but the McCain-Feingold part, because that's what ultimately led to what we call 527s today, right?
Well, again, what they did was they said that you couldn't have limitations on independent expenditures, but they still require this distinction between the campaign and the independent expenditure. So, in other words, you have a pretty low limit on the amount of money you could give to Donald Trump for president,
right?
But you have no limit on what you could give to Mike Church loves Donald Trump for president. Right. Or, you know, so Mike Church loves Donald Trump for president could go out and spend $50 million on advertising against Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton and or Bernie Sanders. But I think the limit is $2,500 that Mike Church could give to Donald Trump for president. So it just doesn't make any sense. There's no, you know, there's no reason why Congress should be allowed by the federal courts under the speech and press clauses, which say Congress shall make no law infringing the freedom of speech and press, there's no reason why Congress should be allowed to do this. It clearly infringes your freedom of speech or press. It clearly keeps you from paying for advertisements bought by the Hillary Clinton campaign, which might be what you want. So it's, as in many areas of constitutional law, it's without any obvious justification. It's had very bad results because you end up now with unknown people buying ads attacking Ted Cruz or attacking Hillary Clinton. And I think that's not desirable if the alternative is to know who's buying these ads. If you ideally it would be Ted Cruz buying anti-Trump ads, Trump buying anti-Cruz ads, each of them buying positive ads about himself, and then people could kind of weigh the messages instead of having who knows whom saying, you know, Cruz's wife is ugly. Well, Melania is not, you know, whatever. I mean, enough of this already.
Or xhamster.com buying ads for all of the above, daring them to actually campaign in the state of North Carolina. If Donald Trump shows up and campaigns in the state of New York, we're going to cut the porn off to New York. if you people are wondering why I keep alluding to this, is because as I was telling Kevin during the show prep today, that you can't make this stuff up. It sounds like it came out of a Keanu Reeves movie, that the xhamster.com site is actually very serious about citing on these grave constitutional matters of our time. And I can't wait until Anthony Kennedy, Kevin. I cannot wait until Anthony Kennedy has to cast the deciding vote for whether or not it is constitutionally permissible for the state of North Carolina to ban 42-year-old sex offender perverts from sharing a bathroom half naked with my 18-year-old daughter. I can't wait to hear how the oracle of all things oracle-y and 14th Amendment-y, Anthony Kennedy, decides or comes down on this.
And of course, as you and I have noted many times before, this is an alternative to having a constitutional government. This has just nothing to do with constitutional government.
You had to drop that in, and I'm glad that you did. It has absolutely nothing to do with having a constitutional government. With as we go to our first time out, let's just reset that. Three branches, bicameral legislature, judiciary with a very specific, precise, and limited purview, an executive with a very limited, specific, and precise purview, and so much for that. And I would say, bon voyage, au revoir, yes, so much for that. How many bombs did Nobel Peace Prize winner of 2009, President Barack Hussein Obama. How many bombs did he drop last year? You gave me a count before we went on today.
And I read today that it was 23,144.
And that's just 1 year's worth, not 7 years, worth.
That's 1 year of peace.
One.
And the seas have ceased to rise.
That's 1 year of peace.
We
and
all have cell phones now.
Yes. And have the seas stopped rising?
Well, that's what he said was going to happen.
There you go. More bombs, less sea rise. What can possibly go wrong? Kevin, hold that thought. When we come back, we're going to deal with this another congressional or another constitutional outrage, and that is the constitutionality, and this must happen, of federal school lunches having meat and taters in them. I kid you not. And a certain presidential candidate who is the Constitution candidate is going to guarantee that that becomes a Constitution reality. This is a Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. We shall return with our next segment. Remember, if you missed any of the previous segments of this show, you can always get them in the Founders Pass section at VeritasRadioNetwork.com.
If James Madison were still alive, he would listen to the Constitution Hour featuring Professor Kevin Gutzman here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.